Welcome to Tales of the Resistance, a podcast all about antimicrobial resistance. I'm Mara Zeltz, and I am the project manager with the I Am Responsible team. And on the podcast today, I'm going to be joined by Amber Patterson.
Hi, I'm Amber Patterson. I'm the multimedia graphics designer with the AMR team.
And by Noelle Atieno-More.
Hi, I am an assistant engineer with Olson, and I'm joining the AMR team to help record the podcast and the Q&A for antimicrobial resistance, like common questions and answers and must know.
Yes, the things that everybody must know.
Yeah.
All right. So are we ready to get into it?
Yep.
Okay. So for our first question today, how can antimicrobial resistance in bacteria be prevented? This is the $50 million question. Who wants to start?
I mean, just knowing that it's naturally occurring can actually be daunting. But again, we exacerbate the situation by using antimicrobials when we don't need to. So basically, I think the best way is, I don't know if that's the best way. But possibly, I think we have had discussions whereby we talk about prudent use of antimicrobials. And so I think that's one way that we can really at least mitigate the spread of antimicrobial resistance. So by, say, you have been prescribed medicine, antibiotics, for instance, at least make sure that we finish the dose and also only get, like, ask your doctor to only prescribe antibiotics when you really need it. So finish your doses, only use antibiotics when they're prescribed, and only administer antibiotics when they're needed.
Yeah, and I think that the point about dosing is important for this topic, because I was saying earlier, trying to describe this point of minimum inhibitory concentration is the point at which we call something antibiotic resistance, because that's a concentration that's medically important.
Mm-hmm.
But bacteria can be exposed to higher levels of an antibiotic or an antimicrobial disinfectant or something like that. And higher levels, they're less and less likely to be able to resist, right? And this will get into one of the future questions in terms of how they resist, but even if they have pretty well-developed resistance mechanisms, they can be overwhelmed by extreme concentrations. So, and what I'm getting at here is that, the real danger is to expose bacteria to low levels, because then that may encourage the mutation without being able to eliminate the threat, right? If the concentration of disinfectant or antimicrobial is high enough to overwhelm the mutation, even if they had it, then it doesn't matter, they're already dead. And that's why it's really important to use your disinfectants, to use your antimicrobials and antibiotics as they were designed to be used, because those concentrations are usually high enough to do the job even if you have resistance. Not always, but that's kind of the point, right? Whereas if you have just sort of low level of antimicrobials just kind of in your environment, you're probably selecting for a lot more mutations. So like if you were just like sort of spraying disinfectant around your house without maybe cleaning things first and without reading the labels in terms of how intense of or how high a concentration you should mix your disinfectant at. You know, those are ways that you can create an environment that is really selecting for a lot of resistance, because you have a little bit, but not enough to kill anything, if that makes sense. So I think in terms of how can this be prevented, like Noelle has said, you know, it's naturally occurring. We're not going to prevent the ability for microbes to mutate. What we have to do is prevent or to minimize the environment in which they are encouraged to mutate, because they're exposed to antibiotics, and that they can survive the exposure. And if we can do those two things, you know, we may never end antimicrobial resistance, but we should be able to survive it a little better, keep ahead of it a little more. I think that's really what we have to kind of make our goal, rather than preventing it, because that's kind of impossible, like, because it is naturally occurring.
I think we need to talk about washing your hands.
Go ahead, Amber.
Well, I have learned, I mean, not that I'm not a hand washer, I am a hand washer, but it's even more important, because if you can prevent illness, then you can prevent needing antibiotics and things of that nature. So it's always good practice to wash your hands. Does anybody?
I think that's a really great point. And not just hand washing, but anything infection prevention, like we were talking, like I was rambling on about earlier with the COVID thing. If we all, you know, if we're learning to live in a world with microbes again, like we were talking about when we were doing our book podcast series, we're learning to live with microbes. There are ways that we can prevent infection, and we should use those tools. And that way we're minimizing our need for antibiotics, minimizing the times in which antimicrobial or in which bacteria who may have a naturally occurring mutation that gives them resistance are going to find that that mutation is suddenly beneficial. And then that mutation spreads through the replication of the individual cell or through horizontal gene transfer. So infection prevention is a huge part of this whole story. That's washing hands. That's also things to do with like food safety. So you can prevent foodborne illnesses. It'd be things like, you know, covering your mouth when you sneeze, or even wearing a mask if you're ill and you don't want your coworkers to get sick. You know, all the things that we've been learning about COVID in terms of infection prevention, those could be used as useful tools for how we sort of manage living in a world with antimicrobial resistance as well. That we had was, how long does it take for a virus or bacteria to acquire resistance to a certain type of medicine?
I've never seen anything about timeline before. Have you?
I looked this up when I saw this question, actually. And it's probably a little bit intuitive, but okay. Basically it's as long as a generation is, right? Because if they're copying their cells every generation, if they're in the presence of something that would encourage a mutation to antibiotic resistance, then the next generation having that, then they're able to survive it, you know, and then that creates the pressures on the whole population that will make that mutation beneficial and spread throughout the population. So how long it takes depends on how long it takes for that particular cell to replicate itself and how often it usually does. And that depends on the species. Like some could be down to the number of hours. You know, like you could do 12 hours from a bacteria being exposed to a new antibiotic to developing resistance to it. Now that doesn't necessarily mean that that's how long it takes for resistance to become widespread and threatening, right? That has some to do with of how bacteria move through an environment. It has a lot more to do with the whole One Health spectrum and how interconnected everything is. But in terms of how quickly a mutation can occur that would give resistance to that antimicrobial, it could be as little as one generation. It just depends on how complex the mutation has to be and what are the sort of trade-offs for using that mutation. And we didn't talk about that yet. And I don't want to get us off on too big of a jag, but so we talked about the fact that these are genetic mutations that give an advantage, but to do what's called gene expression, which is to use that mutation to give resistance, it's not free. You know, it requires that the cell use energy and resources that it would otherwise use doing something else in order to express that gene and do the mechanism of resistance. And so that mechanism is going to be different depending on the microbe and the species of bacteria. But, you know, if that cost is high, even if the resistance is very effective, that gene will not often be expressed naturally, right? And maybe won't even be passed on that often because it requires energy to keep copying that gene generation on generation. And if it's not ordinarily that helpful, then those cells that have that gene will eventually kind of get outcompeted. It's not helpful to them. It's not helpful to the species. So if they're not experiencing antimicrobial resistance, that gene is not really good. It's kind of like a weight around their neck. And then it will take a lot longer, you know, to get a mutation that's actually easy to express and effective.
So you say it takes a generation. As long as it's that bacterial generation is, that's how long it will take for a bacteria to gain resistance.
Well, it can. I mean, it can take as little as a generation. But where I was going with that whole thing about the cost of gene expression is, you know, so in a generation, they're going to have a bunch of mutations, right? When we say they can mutate, we're talking about a population, an individual cell, because the mutation happens within copying of DNA. So it happens for the next generation. The individual cell will probably die. But what happens is if they get into a stress situation, they're going to, you know, start copying more quickly and try to copy enough and mutate enough that somebody in their population, some cell, is going to survive with the correct set of mutations for that environment, right? It's kind of a race against clock. How quickly are they being killed versus how quickly are they able to mutate new mutations to adapt to that environment? And that's why it can happen pretty quickly if they just happen upon the right mutation combination to survive it. But otherwise, it might take a while, you know, of repeated exposures at different levels until the right mutation occurs. Well, we do have a question up here about the mechanisms of adapting.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll, so it says, do all bacteria have the same mechanisms for adapting to antimicrobials? So that's kind of what we're getting at. Maybe we want to move into that one next.
I think there are like multiple mechanisms in which a bacteria can have resistance to antibiotics.
So I would say to answer this question, first of all, it really depends. The mechanisms for adapting to antimicrobials are different depending on the mechanism of the antimicrobial, I should say. So like if the antimicrobial mode of action, and by that, I mean, what effect is it having on the cell? Mm-hmm. If that is to lyse the cell, and that means basically force the cell's wall to open and thereby exploding the cell. If that's what its mode of action is, then the mechanisms for resistance may be different than if the mode of action is basically to interfere with the cell's ability to reproduce. Mm-hmm. But we've talked a lot about the importance of bacterial reproduction in becoming resistant. So if the antimicrobial is interfering with their ability to reproduce because they're not able to copy their DNA correctly or at all, or not able to turn DNA into the proteins that are required to actually do cell function, then you know, those are, that's going to be a different kind of resistance, or of to resist that effect is going to be different than cell lysing. But I saw one somewhere, this nice graphic, and maybe I'll put this in the show notes, that kind of put the different mechanisms for resistance into like four kind of main categories. And they called them inactivation, modification, pumping, and impermeability. So I think pumping is a little bit of a, it could be considered an antimicrobial resistant mechanism, but it could be just like a sort of, it's naturally something that all cells do. And so basically, because cells and human cells have this too, all cells have some kind of membrane barrier wall that separates the cell from just the environment they live in, right? There's some kind of container that defines them, but that container has to have some permeability, some way for things to come from the outside in, or it would never have any food. It would never have any of the elements that it requires to live. And so there's always some level of permeability on those walls. And a lot of that has to do with these pumps, which are not pumps as we ordinarily would understand them. They're just proteins that basically are designed to take certain types of electrons or molecules in and out. And so one mode of resistance would be to have more pumping capacity. Basically, we're going to pump any microbe, or anytime an antibiotic manages to get inside this cell and try and do mischief, we're going to pump it out faster. We're just going to have more pumping capacity, and we'll always be able to survive. That may be one mode.
I think because you're talking about the cell wall, so like, it's, I'll say bacteria, whenever it sees an antibiotic, it gets into combat mode. So basically, you can think of like you, when someone is trying to attack you, you get defensive. And so that's how the bacteria will definitely act whenever there is antibiotics present in the environment. And so another way that they can at least prevent the antibiotics from acting on them is they will restrict the entrance of this antibiotic, and that's through the cell walls. And that way there's no antibiotic coming in because the entrance is restricted. That will be impermeability. You can think of it like in a war. I think that's the worst analogy to give, but it's the best that I can think of right now. So say there is a war. I don't know if anyone is a anime head like me, but I've been watching this show, it's called Attack on Titans, and whereby this village has like four different walls to prevent these foreign people from attacking them. And so basically the bacteria is also the same way. It has multiple cells. So the cell wall has an interior cell wall, and then there's an exterior cell wall. And that way, so when antibiotics come to access to the bacteria, they're not allowed to get in because the cell walls are impermeable and they will not allow the antibiotics to get in to attack them.
Right. And maybe to expand that analogy a little bit, like, so an antibiotic that was supposed to work on that type of microbe should have had the right configuration to trick the cell into letting it in initially. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the mechanism for resistance is basically better identification of the enemy or additional checkpoints or walls or something like that. It's increasingly difficult for that kind of antibiotic to enter, even though it should have been able to enter that species of bacteria before. That's why it was considered a medicine for that. Now, because of genetic mutation, that cell is able to resist the mode of entry or the entry of that antibiotic.
Yeah.
And then the other ones, inactivation. So if it's kind of important to understand within a cell, the shape of the molecules are very important because we're talking about very small things. And proteins, which are kind of the engines of the cell, all cells, including human cells, have these things called proteins in them that do all of the work with us that a cell does. And they basically function by having shapes, very specific, like puzzle piece type shapes that only certain types of molecules can fit into. They're small, and because of the way the molecules are shaped, that's the only molecule that will fit in there. And then that protein knows, oh, it's filled up its correct puzzle piece. Now it can go and put that molecule somewhere. And that's how all of the cell activity, that's the sort of functional level of how it's all happening at a very small microscopic level. And so what you can do, an inactivation how it works is basically the cell, the bacterial cell, will be able to identify the shape of the antibiotic and change it by adding something to it or taking something off. And when it does that, now whatever that antibiotic was supposed to do, usually maybe it was supposed to bind to some one of those little protein engines and stop it from working. Now it can't bind there anymore. It doesn't fit. And so it can't do the thing it was supposed to do. And so that's called inactivation. And then the last one is modification. Inactivation is changing the antibiotic shape. Modification mm-hmm. is changing the protein shape. Mm-hmm. So where the antibiotic came in and was going to fit into a specific spot of a protein, now it can't fit, not because the antibiotic has been changed by the cell, but because the protein has been changed by the cell. So it has the same kind of action, but with a different locale.
That's target modification, right?
Yeah, target modification. All right, so that was a little bit of a fundamentals of antibiotic resistance. Hopefully you got some of your questions answered, or maybe you have some new ones. So please send them our way. You can send it to us on through our social medias at IAmResponsibleEDU on Facebook or Instagram, or at I_AmResponsible on Twitter. Or you can send them to us through email at iamr.educate@gmail.com. And we'd love to have your questions, and we'll continue to add them to the mailbag or future mailbags as they come up. So we hope you enjoyed that, and we'll look forward to talking to everybody again in the next few weeks. So thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Not just Angel from X-Men, but more like Wolverine. Not, no shade on Angel, although maybe there is shade on Angel, but I mean, come on, wings.
Yeah.
Wings.